Joining us now in the studio is Dr. Seth Moore. He's a wildlife biologist with the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, and joins us regularly. Thanks for coming in, Seth.
Thanks, Kara. It's good to be here. Today, I'm going out of town to a meeting. It's a National Climate Change Adaptation Forum in Denver, and I was invited to go talk there about the Grand Portage Band's climate change adaptation plan and some of the things that we're doing to adapt to climate change in the fisheries world.
Okay, what are some of those things you're doing?
Well, I think that one of the most important things that I'm going to talk about is a project that we did at a lake that we call Trout Lake. Historically, that lake was a brook trout lake, and every year we conduct surveys on that lake to check on the status of the populations of the fish. And we did brook trout surveys in that lake from 1990s onward, and what we noticed was during these warmer summers, the lake was getting too hot to be able to sustain brook trout. It was reaching a lethal thermal limit for brook trout, and our brook trout populations began to decline at an extremely rapid rate in that lake. And so we had to make a decision from a management perspective about what we could do to adapt to the fact that this lake was changing and was no longer going to be able to sustain fish that the tribal members subsist on and also used for recreational fishing. So over time, we considered different options, but having a fishless lake wasn't an option. So we ultimately made an executive decision to change this lake into a warmer water fisheries community. And we stocked yellow perch into the lake, and then a few years later, we stocked walleye. And over the course of time, the lake has become self-sustaining for both species.
Walleye is a native fish up here. So why would that survive there when brook trout won't?
Well, brook trout is what's called a cold water obligate species. And so they really need cool temperatures and highly oxygenated water. And so, you know, one of the facts about brook trout is that when water temperatures reach about 75 degrees Fahrenheit, in a matter of hours, that will kill them. The water simply can't hold enough oxygen for the brook trout to survive. So this seemed like a logical approach for us to shift this fisheries community more to a cool water fisheries rather than a cold water fisheries so that the lake wouldn't remain devoid of fish.
Mm-hmm. Are there any downsides to doing this?
Well, I mean, the downside is that we've lost what historically was a trout lake, but there's really nothing that we can do about it. And so, you know, one of the things that is a bit frustrating is that we have to adapt to climate change in the first place, but given that we don't really have alternatives, we have to sort of think about what's the next best scenario that we can do. So that's exactly what we considered, was what are some other native species that could survive given the climate regime that's present now and given the temperature regime that's present in the lake. And this was the best case scenario. The more interesting thing in my mind from a biological perspective is the decision-making process that we're using to adapt to climate change. And this is why we were invited to come talk about this. What we're doing is we're using what are called thresholds or trigger points to change our management strategies. And so, for example, in Trout Lake, when brook trout catch rates exceeded a certain level, you know, let's say, you know, 15 fish per electrofishing hour, which is 1 hour of electrofishing, that means we know that that population is sustainable and is healthy, and we don't really need to do much to manage it. If the brook trout population in that lake fell between a different threshold, say 5 to 10 fish per electrofishing hour, then we know we need to conduct active restoration in that lake. We need to look at different management strategies. We might need to change some regulations. We might need to do supplemental stocking to help to maintain brook trout in that lake. But if the brook trout population in the lake falls below, say, 5 fish per electrofishing hour for a period of 3 or 4 years, we know that we aren't able to adapt to the changing temperature regime in that lake, and all of our effort will just be wasted. So that's where we need to make an executive decision to do something drastic in terms of shifting how we manage that lake. And that's exactly what happened. So the data that I'll present at this talk will show the declining trend in brook trout, the period of time that brook trout remained below sustainable population levels, and then what has happened with the yellow perch and walleye populations once we started stocking them.
So basically at this conference that you're going to in Denver, you're going to be sharing basically your methodology.
Yeah. The conceptual framework that we decided on, and we've made similar trigger points and thresholds for all the different fisheries on the reservation, whether it's lake trout in Lake Superior or walleye in the Pigeon River or the fisheries in our inland lakes. We've figured out objective ways to determine what our management approaches might be in light of what we expect to happen with climate change.
Okay. And if I remember correctly, we've talked about this before. The Grand Portage Band is one of the first bands to actually address climate change and to come up with a climate change adaptation plan.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think we are the first tribe in the States, or one of the first tribes, to put together a climate change adaptation plan specific to natural resources and the environment. And the plan now is we have all the content into the plan, and we're editing it and then hope to get it out to some outside review. And then ultimately we'll bring it to our tribal council and have them review it, make any additional changes, and then ultimately try to get it adopted by resolution from the tribal council.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners, we're talking with Dr. Seth Moore. He's a wildlife biologist with the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, and we speak with him regularly. He's on his way to a national adaptation forum in Denver, Colorado. Is there anything else you wanted to tell us about that?
No, I just had one little piece of trivia from my daughter, Hannah. And this is, I think, interesting in light of the fact that I've been seeing lots of owls lately. But what I've learned is that owls' eyes are fixed in their sockets. They actually cannot move their eyes. They have to move their head.
Well, that explains a lot.
It does. It does. But my daughter, thinking about this, tried that approach as well. And so it was interesting to watch her moving her head around without moving her eyes.
Well, that's wonderful. Once again, Seth's daughter Hannah shares wildlife and natural history trivia with us. So we want to thank her for that. And we'll look forward to talking with you again soon, Seth. Have a good trip.
Yep. Thanks, Kara.